From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, you're listening to the Best of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present a previously recorded episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank's guest is Brett McCracken, senior editor for the Gospel Coalition and author of The Wisdom Pyramid: Feeding Your Soul in a Post-Truth World. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
And welcome to another edition of a Hank Unplugged podcast, which is a podcast that is designed to bring the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people directly to your earbuds. Today, we want to talk about wisdom. Solomon said something about wisdom, which has always stuck in my mind. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding, for its profit is better than the profit of silver, and its gain than fine gold. She's more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire compares with her. Long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She's a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who hold her fast. So you think about the importance of wisdom, and all of a sudden, my son gives me a book which deals with that very thing. In fact, on the front cover of the book is the Wisdom Pyramid. And we often have that Wisdom Pyramid inverted. And a person that wrote about this eloquently in this book is Brett McCracken. He's senior editor and director of communications for the Gospel Coalition. He's written for the Wall Street Journal, which I read every day, the Washington Post, which I do not, Christianity Today, and many other publications. And he has authored several books, including the book that's in focus today, The Wisdom Pyramid, the subtitle, Feeding Your Soul in a Post-Truth World. I am absolutely delighted, Brett, to have you on my podcast after reading the book.
Thank you, Hank. Thank you. It's an honor to be with you.
I want to talk about this idea of wisdom in an age of information overload. One of the points you make is that we have information overload, but we have lost the ability to discern. And we've really have knowledge as an end in itself, as opposed to wisdom being the application of that knowledge.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the kind of paradox that I initially kind of was the catalyst for wanting to write this book was the observation of we live in this information age where we've never had more access to knowledge and information in human history. You know, every question you could have is a Google search away. The entire like written history of human civilization is now on your smartphone, essentially. So we're not lacking for knowledge or information, but I don't think anyone would look around at the world today and observe that we've reached this pinnacle of wisdom as a culture. So, and if anything, I think wisdom has been degraded and is suffering in the age of information. And I think part of that is the overload of information and maybe confusing having access to knowledge and information as enough. So I see that in my own world. I work as a digital journalist for the website, the Gospel Coalition. So I spend a lot of time in the internet space, and I just see, you don't have to go far on social media to see how foolishness abounds in today's world and wisdom is lacking, even among Christians. So I really wanted to explore what does it look like to recover wisdom in the digital age as Christians, and through Christians, the culture at large, hopefully will also discover wisdom as well.
Brett, talk about the necessity for contemplation. I so often use the example of watching a television show, and maybe it's a newscast, and you have this incredibly profound subject that's being dealt with. Could be starvation or whatever it happens to be, and then there's a commercial. And you never really have the opportunity to contemplate, So you have profound information and then a soap commercial.
Yeah, I mean, I quote Neil Postman quite a lot in the book, who is a media theorist who was very prophetic in what he was writing about in books like Amusing Ourselves to Death back in the 80s. And he talks about that very thing in the age of television, which is what he was writing about in the 80s. It was this constant stream of now this, and then this, and this consequential news event next to a weather report, next to a human interest story, you know, next to genocide in Africa, and all these things of varying degrees of consequence and importance are coming at us in this steady stream of content in a way that is too fast for our brains and our souls to kind of properly digest. And if that was true back in the 80s when Postman was first writing about it, you know, how much more so is it true in the age of Twitter when everyone is just constantly scrolling through content and things are coming at us at this rapid fire pace, and we don't ever take the time to be unmediated long enough to let things digest and synthesize, to be critical thinkers about what we just saw on our phones, about whether it's a news story. You know, this is why, and we can talk more about this, but this is why fake news and kind of people being duped is happening more and more. It's this phenomenon of the speed and the glut of information means there's very little space left for people to exercise discernment, critical thinking, synthesis, connecting the dots a little bit, asking, you know, probing questions about, you know, what is the source of this headline that I'm reading? Is it a valid source? Fact checking, the things like that. We just go too fast for that. And the media industry is kind of incentivized to go fast, to fill us, you know, in this binge kind of fast food buffet diet of information so that we're hooked, so that we're just like, we're all just glued to our screens constantly. And when we're constantly mediated, wisdom suffers. I think we're all seeing that. So, you know, one of the things I say in the book is quoting this book, The Common Rule by Justin Early. He says something like, you know, staring at a blank wall is infinitely better for your wisdom than digesting content constantly, you know, even if it's good content, even if it's like a really thoughtful podcast, you know, with Hank Hanegraaff and, you know, Augustine's City of God and some other, even if it's really meaty content, if we're just filling ourselves in this binging kind of diet, never giving our system time to synthesize it and process it properly, then it's not worthwhile. And so we need to create space for that. Contemplation is huge in the wisdom tradition and in the faith tradition. And so that's the lost art in today's world and for today's Christians who, even when they're well-intentioned, to kind of fill themselves up with good content, like this podcast here, this book here, you know, this, like too much of a good thing is still a bad thing if it means you're not making space to digest it all.
Yeah, we'll get into this more when we get into the wisdom pyramid itself. But one of the antidotes, as you point out, is learning to read, because reading gives you an opportunity to digest, to assimilate information more slowly, as opposed to on this breakneck speed.
Yeah, it's why books, you know, are pretty prominent in the wisdom pyramid, not only, you know, for the content that you will glean from books, but really for the muscle that reading is developing, you know, which is that muscle of discernment and processing that is kind of atrophying a little bit in the digital age. And there's science that is showing this, right? People are literally, our brains are losing the ability to read in a focused, sustained way. And it makes sense, you know, if the younger generation is growing up in this TikTok world where content is just like 5 seconds of this, 5 seconds of that, of course their brains are going to struggle to process information in the way that a book requires, which is a focused kind of deep dive into one idea, one author's perspective for a sustained period of time. But I mean, I just think that if we lose the ability to read as a culture, then what do we do with the Bible? You know, God's revelation to us, like, what do we do with the great books, you know, that have been written by our forebears that are so packed with wisdom? So that muscle of like learning to read well is so essential in the development of wisdom.
Yeah. And I think the latest statistic I read is that more than a quarter of the population has not even read one single book in the last year. So reading has become a lost art. In your book, you talk about chronological snobbery, and you talk about a very interesting statement, perpetual novelty, perpetual presentism. We so often in our age have come to the place where we think if it's new, it's better. So rather than perpetuation, it's constant innovation. Chronological snobbery is a big problem.
It is. It's a huge problem. And, you know, I think that Christians have perpetuated it. Evangelicals, you know, in the modern era have kind of bought into this idea that new is good and reinvention is a necessity. You know, there's this sense, you know, I'm in California. That's where I go to church. It's where I live. And California is notorious for this kind of disregard for the past, a focus on innovation always. And lots of, you know, Christian things have originated here, whether like the mega church type idea or the Jesus People movement or whatever.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with author Brett McCracken. In his new book, The Wisdom Pyramid, Brett McCracken writes, "In order to bring the light of Christian wisdom to the darkness of our unwise age, Christians must recover habits of wisdom in their own lives. The Wisdom Pyramid," McCracken explains, "is a plan for stabilizing a sick society by making Christians wiser, God-fearing, truth-worthy, truth-tellers, and truth-livers. Precisely what Christians are called to be and what the world desperately needs followers of Christ to be. To receive your copy of The Wisdom Pyramid, Feeding Your Soul in a Post-Truth World by Brett McCracken, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
Did you know that you are an important part of God's plan for the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute? CRI is supported by people like you who share our mission to equip Christians to give an answer for the hope we have. So every life-changing broadcast and resource is made possible by your prayers and gifts. As our world concludes the challenging year of 2022, consider the famous lines from C.T. Studd's poem, "Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last." For those of us who have set our hearts and eyes on eternity, that's an important reminder. Please partner with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI at this crucial time. Call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Truth Matters, Life Matters More details Hank Hanegraaff's personal pilgrimage from his long defense of truth to his discovery that life matters more. Essentially two books in one, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. Part 2 explains why truth is necessary, but hardly sufficient. That the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We are created to experience life to the full through union with God in Christ. Is there more to the Christian life than what you are experiencing? Truth Matters, Life Matters More unveils the unexpected beauty of an authentic Christian life. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More for yourself or as a terrific gift to a friend or loved one, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us online at equip.org.
An infinite God reduced to the size of a human embryo, the creator of time and space, invading both in human form? Such is the mystery and the majesty of the Incarnation, supreme being condescending to become one of us. Perhaps nothing is more important than grasping the significance of the coming God in human flesh. Without the life, death, and resurrection of the incarnate one who walked among us, our world would be unfathomably dark. To be equipped as a witness and to be inspired in your walk, you'll want to feast on Hank Hanegraaff's book, Incarnation, The Ultimate Self-Revelation of God. To receive your copy of Incarnation, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Brett McCracken, as they continue their conversation.
California is notorious for this kind of disregard for the past, a focus on innovation always, and lots of Christian things have originated here, whether like the mega church type idea or the Jesus people movement or whatever. And so I see it in my own context, and there's this kind of obsession with novelty. And of course, Hollywood and the entertainment industry and the fashion world perpetuate this as well. It's what I wrote about in my first book, Hipster Christianity, which was a critique of this kind of novelty obsession, this relevance obsession that the church has kind of bought into following the consumer culture, which is that in order to make an impact missionally, we have to kind of seize the zeitgeist of the moment in the way that Nike or some fashion brand does. We have to contextualize to the zeitgeist now and follow the trends in order to like reach the young people. That's the assumption. But it couldn't be more wrong-headed, I think, because, you know, when you're constantly chasing the trends, which are becoming more and more disposable in the age of TikTok, things are here and gone in a nanosecond. It's a fool's errand for anything as significant and substantive as Christianity to attach itself to kind of this presentist ephemeral focus when we have this great wealth of history and church fathers and wisdom of ages past to draw from. To me, it's just a really missed opportunity to kind of follow the culture in this focusing on the now to be relevant posture. So it's terrible for wisdom, for anyone, but for the church and our call in the world, I think it's a really bad misjudgment.
Talk to the danger of being a digital wanderer, as you put it.
Yeah, I mean, the structure of these social media feeds is kind of like it plays into our human tendency by our fallen nature, I think, to be distractible and fidgety, and we're never content, right, with what we have. You know, we see something off in the corner of our periphery, and that's attractive and that's interesting. So we forget where we're going in life and we wander off the path. And that's what the social media experience is, right? Very few people go onto their Twitter app or Facebook or Instagram with like a specific purpose or intention. Instead, they're digital wanderers going wherever the algorithm calls out to them the loudest. And the algorithms are so sophisticated. That's the scary thing about this technology, is they're becoming more and more sophisticated at knowing exactly what each individual consumer has kind of a sweet spot for. What are their proclivities? What are they most tempted by? And so the algorithms are kind of the forbidden fruit of the technological era. They're like, here, take a bite of this thing. It's good for you, right? You've clicked on things like this before, so I know that you like this. And in the book, I make the comparison of drawing from the book of Proverbs and the imagery throughout Proverbs of Lady Folly. And there's this kind of idea that, you know, wisdom is staying on the path and kind of pursuing the path of righteousness. And that speaks to intention and kind of having your gaze set on this path. But Lady Folly is this character who's often like sitting off on the periphery on her doorstep calling out, come here, come taste what I have. I have some sweet things for you. You know, you want to take a little break from your intentional walk and come over and hang out with me. The algorithms are the Lady Folly of our day. They're calling out to each of us all day, every day, to be wanderers, to not be intentional in any one direction, but to be susceptible to the kind of whims of novelty acts, basically, and kind of little snippets of entertainment that are always beckoning for our attention. So it's super dangerous to be a wanderer, I think, in life in general. I mean, we can talk about some good instances where making space for exploration is good. But in terms of the internet, I think very little positive results when you kind of open your phone or go on Google without any intention, and you're just kind of like killing time. And that rarely ends well. You click on one thing, and then you click on something else, and then one thing leads to another, and an hour has passed, and you're like, what did I do with my hour? And I ended up in this unseemly corner of the internet. And that's what's happening all over the place.
There's another dark side to algorithms, in that the tech companies can really lead you in a particular political direction as well.
Yeah. I didn't even mention the political side, but that's a huge problem. And the way that our society is becoming more hyper-partisan in the last decade or so, I think there's a lot of kind of contributing factors to that, but I think the social media kind of environment of algorithms, which tend to kind of create echo chambers where people, their views become more and more entrenched because they're only seeing things that reinforce their views, and they're becoming more and more extreme because Facebook is happy to kind of put something on your Facebook feed that is the most extreme example of either your side or something terrible that the other side has done. So yeah, the political fallout from the age of the algorithm is something I think we're just beginning to see the effects of.
You mentioned the vulnerability we have to fake news. And one of the examples you give in the book is the Jussie Smollett situation. Mm-hmm. But there are many other situations like that. I think about Bubba Wallace. And we pounce on information immediately. And then if it fits our particular narrative, we disseminate that information broadly, as opposed to doing things more slowly, doing the kind of investigative journalism that used to be part and parcel of the media within the country.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, there we could do a whole podcast on the state of journalism today and how, you know, it's not seeing its best days, I think. But yeah, because the speed of the internet is what it is, and because journalistic entities are now kind of beholden to the laws of the speed of the internet, like you have to go fast. If you're the New York Times, you're competing with, you know, all of these many other content providers for people's attention. And the algorithms reward the kind of fast hot takes. Consumers tend to gravitate towards those. So the incentives, if you're the New York Times or Fox News on the other kind of extreme, the incentive is speed. That's where the money is. That's where the clicks are. That's where the eyeballs are. But like you just said, Hank, the reporting is not going to be as good as it could be if speed is the ultimate priority, because every story, you know, could use a little bit more time to develop, a little bit more fact checking, a little bit more care in making sure the full context is known and reported. But the incentive isn't there to go slow. The incentives are all for the speed. And this is why, you know, you can even have the New York Times, which positions itself as the gold standard of journalistic integrity. Even they were like perpetuating the Jussie Smollett case. They were reporting that story in a narrative sort of fashion that ended up, you know, being completely false. And so we're in a dangerous place as a society when even the most trusted sources of news are not reliable anymore, by virtue of this speedy dynamic that goes faster than prudence would require for like a good, healthy report. So yeah, it's troubling to me. I mean, this is why if you look at Gallup's survey of like public trust in major institutions, like trust has gone down for every institution, but the news media is like the lowest rated of all the institutions in terms of like declining trust. People just don't trust the news anymore. And so if we come to a place like that, where no one really trusts that what is being reported is valid, and it's all just narrative, you know, on one side or the other, then of course we're in a post-truth crisis, you know? So that's where we're at.
What about the democratization of information?
As like a positive side, perhaps, or?
Well, I mean, it has a very negative side as well, because what you wrongly construe in your mind is that all that information is equal in terms of value and weight. And it's hard for people to discern between wheat and chaff and heat and light when you have this democratization of information.
Yeah, you know, in the early days of the internet, for those of us who, you know, can remember the arrival of the internet, the World Wide Web was positioned as this kind of democratization of information. No longer is information going to be filtered through the gatekeepers of just a handful of, you know, powerful people or media companies. And to some extent, I think that has been true, because the internet gives real estate for any and all perspectives, even those that Rupert Murdoch or George Soros disagrees with. They don't hold the keys to the kingdom necessarily anymore. Anyone has a voice. But the problem with that is that now that we're in this kind of all ideas are equal place, where because every voice has a seat at the table and there's no referee, you know, who's kind of looking at all of the perspectives and saying this one is valid, this one is not, we tend to just kind of gravitate towards the voices that we already agree with and that we want to be true.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest Brett McCracken. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of The Wisdom Pyramid, Feeding Your Soul in a Post-Truth World by Brett McCracken. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more.
Did you know that you are an important part of God's plan for the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute? CRI is supported by people like you who share our mission to equip Christians to give an answer for the hope we have. So every life-changing broadcast and resource is made possible by your prayers and gifts. As our world concludes the challenging year of 2022, consider the famous lines from C.T. Studd's poem, "Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last." For those of us who have set our hearts and eyes on eternity, that's an important reminder. Please partner with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI at this crucial time. Call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. That's equip.org.